You're listening to the Music Marketing Manifesto podcast, where we discuss advanced strategies, tactics, and tips for actually selling your music. If you'd like to learn more music marketing strategies, then go to musicmarketingmanifesto.com. That's musicmarketingmanifesto.com, and sign up for your free copy of the Music Marketing Blueprint. All right, this is John Ojaka.
This is Steve Rogers.
And today we're going to be talking to musician and fellow Insider Circle member Ace Connell about some early success that he's had with the Music Marketing Manifesto method and direct-to-fan marketing in general. If you have any questions that you'd like us to address on future episodes of the Music Marketing Manifesto podcast, then please call 1-800-296-1406. That's 1-800-296-1406. Just leave a message after the tone and we'll include it on an upcoming show. All right, before we jump into that interview with Ace, which I think you guys are really going to enjoy, there is it's a really inspirational call that we did with him. He sent in an email not too long ago talking about how he had just bought Music Marketing Manifesto and joined the Insider Circle and started implementing some of the strategies and had some real early successes. I think he got his mailing list from 0 to 500 in just a couple of days, and it was really inspiring, and I wanted to share that with you guys. It's actually an excerpt from one of our Insider Circle coaching calls, and I thought this would make a great little interview to share with you folks on the podcast. So we're going to be doing that in a sec, but before we do that, just kind of want to chit-chat a little bit with Steve about things taking place in the music industry. One of those things is Twitter Music. There's been a lot of talk in the last month or so about Twitter Music. It's a new platform offered by Twitter, which allows you to essentially explore and share music. And it seems to primarily be designed around trending and aiding music in going viral and sharing music that is naturally already gone viral to some extent and helping it become even more popular. But there are still a lot of questions out there. You know, is this just another social network that, or another social network creating a music sharing platform that we really don't need to care about? Or is this something that's going to be really relevant and actually help us as the music consumer? And more importantly, for those listening, is this something that can help us as independent musicians? So, neither one of us pretend to really be experts on the subject. As we say, it is an emerging platform, but certainly it's something that we've looked into, and we thought we'd just kind of bounce that around for a little bit, because I know there are a lot of questions coming in about Twitter Music. I mean, what are your thoughts? What are your first impressions, Steve, after looking into it?
Well, I haven't really had a chance to look at it extensively, but one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting was the fact that you can look into different artists that you're following or listening to. So in other words, you know, if they've got their music up there and there's somebody that you really admire as an artist and you're following them on Twitter, you can look through and see some of the artists they're following and kind of discover new music that way, which I think on the reverse end of that is a really cool way. You know, it's always nice when you can get somebody who's got a bit of a higher profile to push your stuff. And what's really cool is if they're legitimately listening to your stuff, then their entire following audience has a chance to hear you too. And I think that's really exciting for folks.
Sure, sure. The big question, obviously, you know, that at least comes to my mind, and it's certainly the one we're getting in the inbox there, is just how can a musician use Twitter Music to actually promote their music? And again, I personally haven't dove into it yet and figured out if there are many opportunities for independent artists. Certainly when you look at what's trending and what's popular, it appears at least at a glance to be very mainstream, very successful artists. But as far as I can tell, and again, I haven't really dove into the algorithm to figure out what potential there is for someone to actually affect those rankings, but it does appear to be largely just, as one might assume, a popularity-based charting system. In other words, if people are talking about you, if people are playing your music, if people are sharing your music and tweeting about it, then presumably one will rise in that ranking. And once you do, and as that user base widens, then it only stands to reason that, let's say, you find yourself with a top 10 ranking and you are actually trending on Twitter, then many, many more people will suddenly discover you because you'll be in that top tier of artists, and things could only, you know, potentially snowball from there. So one thing that at least comes to my mind, and it'd certainly be worth trying, is if you're interested in seeing what you can get out of Twitter Music, then if you've got a few thousand people on your mailing list, it would be worth sending out a blast 1 month when you got really maybe perhaps nothing else to promote or nothing else significant going on. Send out a blast to your list and try and get a whole bunch of people, you know, encourage them, ask them to click the little tweet button there on Twitter and see if you can't get 500, 1,000 people in a short span of time tweeting about your music. Again, not knowing the nuances of their particular algorithm yet, I can't say for certain what this might do, but if it stands to reason and it works in a similar way to most ranking algorithms out there, that should really give you a solid boost. Now, what's it going to take to go up against artists like David Bowie and Justin Bieber and everybody in between? It's hard to say. However, a lot of activity in a short period of time might just be enough to take you over the top and get you that position, at least for a short period of time, which then, of course, could potentially snowball in your favor. So I don't know. If I'm giving my honest first impression, you know, I suppose the reason I haven't really dove into Twitter Music is that it does, to a certain extent, just feel like yet another platform that's out there where people suggest that this is really something that's going to help the consumer, or the company providing it suggests this is really going to help the consumer. But it appears to, or often these platforms appear to be little more than a company profiting off of the content that you're ultimately creating. You know, this platform, I don't see it providing anything that hashtags and Twitter search doesn't already sort of offer, but now Twitter can make some money off of your music. So I don't know. It doesn't make me feel the need to really dive in and spend a ton of time. For me, it's sort of like, you know, another iTunes. Like iTunes as a search engine, unless you're doing cover songs, you know, it doesn't really offer a lot of new business for an independent artist who's putting their music out on the platform. And I fear that the same might be the case with Twitter, although there is a general viral nature to activity on Twitter. And so if a platform was going to offer something new, it could be Twitter. So it's definitely something to watch. I like Twitter as a social platform. I probably like it more than Facebook, but I don't know if Twitter Music is really going to offer all that much. You know, sort of reminds me of Google Play, which I think is still out there, and I spent that first day playing around on Google Play and haven't touched it since. And I'd be curious to know if Twitter Music can pull off much more than that. By all means, if anybody listening to this has had some experience with Twitter Music, if you're liking the platform either as a listener or you're seeing new fans coming in as a result of Twitter Music, then definitely give us a call and let us know. I'd like to hear about it. Did you have any other sort of thoughts on Twitter Music that you wanted to share there, Steve?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way you do with regards to just being on a platform that has a player. And I say that only because, you know, I'm not a big user of any of them. And it's the age-old argument that I have with my bandmates probably once a week. They're always asking me, you know, is there a place where people can just go listen to our music? And of course, you know, the other guy in my band has stuff set up on Reverb Nation and some of those sites, and of course they can go listen. And I keep trying to drive the point home to them, like, well, you know, wouldn't we rather have them get interest and download some of our stuff so we can follow up? And, you know, we kind of butt heads on that stuff every now and again. But as far as Twitter Music, I'd like to look into it more. I think that there's some opportunity, just from what you talked about the viral nature of Twitter itself. And being able to, you know, at least rely on one, if you're going to look at these platforms, at least look at one versus the others and figure out which one is going to give you the most traction.
Gotcha.
Worth a look.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I said it's worth a look.
Cool. I'm losing you a little bit here and there, so my apologies, folks, for the audio drops. They're just little second blurbs, but such is the nature with these recordings conducted over the internet. Steve and I are actually across the world from one another right now, so we often have these little blips. But before diving into that interview, there was one more thing I kind of wanted to talk about because it's been on my mind a lot lately, and that's just Kickstarter. Now, I know this is not a new topic. Kickstarter has been dominating, you know, the entertainment news cycles for a while. The last few months have been no exception. I know, what was it, Veronica Mars, the television show that I think was, if I remember right, it was canceled, and they went and generated – did they hit the 4 million mark? I think they were asking for 2 million, and I believe they hit four. I'm actually not 100% sure on what they ultimately did, although they far surpassed their goals to generate funds to make a movie so that they could create more content for the fans. And that was the first time that I had seen something come from the sort of mainstream world, at least on that scale of a major network television show, and go into the Kickstarter realm. And it kind of made a lot of light bulbs go off in my head. And just in general, my experience with Kickstarter has really been changing. There was another one recently with, what's his name, Zach Graff. I think he generated, was it $2 million, somewhere in that vicinity, to fund a film that he wanted to make. And obviously, most people listening to this have probably heard about Amanda Palmer's story, which is some months ago, where she generated over, I think it was $1.1 million, setting the record for the most money ever generated for a music project. And actually, that's been an interesting story to follow because she's caught a whole bunch of flack for that. Not so much for generating the money, although there were some, I suppose, critics there as well, saying, you know, that she didn't need that much money and all these kinds of things, which I personally disagree with. I think she was pretty clear and transparent about what that money was for. But after the fact, she went on tour and invited musicians to get up on stage with her and was not offering pay for that. It was more of a spontaneous event, but got a lot of criticism, a lot of criticism, thousands of angry comments on her blog, and she's spoken about it quite a bit, where people were saying, you just made $1 million and now you're asking people to play for free. I don't think that is actually how it went down, and I think you know, it was just sort of a casual request that, in light of that $1 million that, in my personal opinion, maybe some people were a little jealous about, she nevertheless, that juxtaposition created a lot of conflict, and it's been, again, a real interesting story to follow. But what this has done, at least for me, has it's really changed my perspective on what Kickstarter actually is. I think part of the problem is that Kickstarter emerged as sort of a charity platform. It was something, and it still is to a large extent, it was people who really were, I don't want to use the word desperate, but they had no other options, and so they were turning to friends and family to generate money and fans. And when I first started seeing these emails go out from artists asking for money, you know, donations to help fund their album, I really didn't like it. I was really turned off by it. I thought it was begging, and, you know, my first reaction was to go pay for your album yourself. I had to do it. You do it. And I think a lot of people still wrestle with that impression. However, how I personally am seeing Kickstarter, and I think this is changing because we're seeing more and more products and some really innovative products using Kickstarter as a platform, I now see this as a way for us as consumers to really turn the table on the big corporate structure that we've got going on out there. What it is it's a opportunity for us as consumers to deal directly with either manufacturers or, in the case of music, with artists, to get the art or the products that we ultimately want. And it takes the power away from these traditional distribution channels that have been so dominated by major corporations. Taking the television show, you know, Veronica Mars, using that as an example, here was something that it had millions of fans, but it didn't have millions enough fans. And so it's a very viable product, that was connecting with an audience, but, you know, and I don't know how many millions of people it takes to keep a show alive, but making up some numbers here, you know, maybe it only had 4 million viewers and it needed 6 in order to justify its spot in the lineup. But that didn't mean that it wasn't good art, and I've never even watched the show. I couldn't comment on whether it is or it isn't, but it certainly is valid art to those millions of fans that are out there. And by going the Kickstarter route, there is now life given to this project that the big corporate structure would say wasn't warranted. And the same goes for music. I mean, how many of us have heard of fantastic bands that have sold, you know, in their time, millions of copies of albums that ultimately get dropped because, you know, their second or third record maybe only sells a few hundred thousand and the label can no longer justify spending the money on it and tying up their promotion staff on an artist that seems to have reached its peak, and they get dropped. And very often they break up and we don't ever hear from these artists that are still valid, that do have millions of fans still out there, or certainly hundreds of thousands, or you know, thousands for that matter. Any number of fans makes that art valid. And with a platform like Kickstarter, again, we bypass all those rules and all those very strict standards that sort of clog and prohibit other people from accessing these traditional distribution channels, and they give opportunity to anyone who can garnish some level of attention. You know, whether you have 1,000 true fans or 100,000 true fans, this is just an opportunity to bypass the middlemen and create art, create products for the people that actually want them. And that's now how I'm seeing it. This is not charity. Kickstarter and Indiegogo and all these crowdsourcing platforms, they're not charity. They are wholesale entertainment purchasing opportunities. And I think that we're going to see that understanding and that mindset shift continue. And, you know, it's sort of a pay in advance to prove whether or not the concept or the art, as it may be, is actually valid in terms of desired by a significant enough number of people. And it's true supply and demand, and I really like it, and I'm really excited to explore it more. I haven't personally ever run a Kickstarter campaign. Again, I've been shy to do it because of how I viewed it. But now, again, it's literally just going out to your base of your audience and saying, hey, I've got some stuff to say or some stuff to create. I'd like to create it for you. Just let me know if you want me to by ordering in advance. And I really like that. In fact, it may almost take a new, you know, the invention of a slightly different platform so that we can shake the Kickstarter mindset, that the charity mindset that so many of us have associated with it, and really change that shift once and for all to more of a sort of entertainment wholesale outlet where we're encouraging true supply and demand.
Yeah, I think Kickstarter is, like you said, it's moved beyond the charity thing, because initially about it, I felt the same way you did, where it's almost like a turnoff. You kind of feel like, you know, when someone's out there asking for help to do a project, you do kind of get that sense like, hey, you know what, I did put in the work and the time and raise the money the hard way to do it myself before, and why don't you? What I've kind of seen it turn into, and it's not just musicians and filmmakers. I've seen this with software designers are getting their games made, and it's exactly what you said. It's, you know, if you've got a group of people that you can at least pitch this idea to, it's almost like you're looking for investors, except that these people aren't looking for a return. They're just kind of pre-ordering something awesome that they already know that they want. And, you know, why not contribute to help make that happen? If you want it that bad, you want to see a certain project done, you're going to go ahead and get behind it. And I think that's really great for independent artists.
Yeah, just to make like a hypothetical example, let's take something like The Simpsons. I'm a big fan of The Simpsons. And if they, you know, I know they're constantly sort of talking about whether or not, you know, we're seeing the last season of The Simpsons and the show's going to end. If they went out to an audience and said, hey, we're considering canceling the show. We just want to know if you want us to make another season for you. You've got to order in advance. And if we get enough customers, we'll make that season. I'd do it in a second because I love the show and I want that content. And that's sort of the exciting potential for it's not even potential. It's how platforms like Kickstarter are being used. But again, I think there's still a lot of confusion and different viewpoints about what is actually happening when someone sets up a Kickstarter campaign. Many people still feel that like there is a charity component, and I really think that this needs to be viewed more as an order in advance kind of a platform. And I think again, I love capitalism, as you know, and I love libertarian ideas and true sort of supply and demand. And I never saw it as being inherent to the Kickstarter model. And I suddenly do. And it's really opened up, you know, it's really set off a lot of light bulbs in my own mind as to how this platform can be used, not only for myself, but just people in general. And I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, it's great. And it's also nice to see when someone who's got a campaign running and they really, really got their stuff together, where they can honestly sit there and explain to people, hey, listen, you know, if you come in at this certain level of donation, you're going to get this, this, and that. But hey, if we meet our goal and we surpass our goal, here's what we're planning to do instead. And I think that's really cool. You know, you get all these different people that have their campaigns and they've got these certain stretch goal ideas where they want to do something extra cool on top of just, you know, putting out an album or giving you a nice physical package for the album, where they can do all these other cool things, you know, video documentaries on how the album was made, all this other stuff that could have some production value to it because they're getting the funding and they've got enough people that say that they want it. I mean, that's really awesome.
Yeah, and how many
You couldn't
artists?
have done that years ago.
Sure. And how many artists have complained that, the label got in the way and, influenced their sound, made them do something that they didn't want to do, watered down the art with this kind of direct-to-fan funding? That's not really a factor. The artists get they communicate directly with their fans, and they're getting funded directly by the people who appreciate what they do. So again, instead of some corporate clown that may or may not know what the people actually want, the fans are speaking for themselves. The buyers are speaking for themselves and getting exactly what they actually want. And if they don't want it, it doesn't get funded and it doesn't happen. And some real interesting people have been coming out of the works playing with Kickstarter. Bjork actually came, she launched the Kickstarter campaign and interestingly canceled it within, was it, I don't know if it was 24 hours or shortly thereafter it launched. And it was not doing very well, to be honest, but it was a very kind of confused, it wasn't for an album. I wasn't. I think it was a weird, like, educational app or piece of software or something like that. Honestly, I watched the whole presentation, and now a few weeks later, and I can't even remember what it was. And I think that was part of the problem. It was very confused. But she, and this was, if I remember right, a little bit before the Veronica Mars campaign and the Zach Graff campaign. And she caught a lot of crap for it because people came out and said, you're rich. Why do you need us to donate money to it? And I think, there has that was maybe. Well, it's certainly not going to be the end of that kind of criticism, but it was shortly after Amanda Palmer had her success, and there was really this fervor in the air of people criticizing artists that were using Kickstarter for if they already had financing, they felt that, why do you need charity? Why do you need us to support something? You've already got the money, and I just really don't see it as being relevant to that. The fact of whether or not a person personally has money or not. This is testing the market and asking your fans, do you want me to create this product for you or this art for you? And if they do, they'll fund it and they'll get it, and they'll get it in most likely a much cooler way. That's kind of the idea, is that you give people an opportunity to consume or purchase in a way that they wouldn't get if they were going retail, a better price or maybe with some extras added on. And it's just, it really just changes the purchasing and financing model, and again, does away or potentially does away with that sort of corporate middleman. And I just really like it. I'm really excited to see how it continues to evolve.
Well, and kind of on your point there about the criticism that people get, and I've seen this firsthand, where some of the same folks that are criticizing somebody like an Amanda Palmer for doing that are going out and doing their own Kickstarter campaign, but at the same time, when it's not going as well as they think it should go, they're coming right back onto Facebook and bashing their fans for it. And to me, that's worse than asking for a donation. You know what I mean?
Sure,
It's
sure.
just not it's not a cool thing to do at all. You if people wanted to get behind you and support you, they'd be out there, supporting your campaign. And if they're not, it probably says more about you and what you're doing than anything else.
Yeah, just to burst any lingering bubbles about Kickstarter. Kickstarter's not some, gigantic menu where the population at large is just browsing for an interesting artist to donate money to. If you don't have a tribe, if you don't have a following, and you put out a Kickstarter campaign, your close friends and family might donate a little bit, but you're never going to see any kind of amazing results. Artists like Amanda Palmer, who generated $1 million, she had tens of thousands of fans. She had a huge Twitter following and a huge mailing list following, from what I understand, and they were a very dedicated and passionate group of fans, and that is what that is where this funding is coming from. In all of these campaigns, it still takes work. It's not a free lunch. It's not, hey, I'm just asking for charity, and suddenly you're going to see $1 million pour in. You're gonna have a project that goes unfunded if you do it that way. And so all of this stuff, regardless of how you go about it's still basically a sales platform. It's just a sales in advance platform. You're still going to have to do all of those same things, create a compelling pitch. And one of the reasons I think Kickstarter works so well is because it's sort of got scarcity and time sensitivity built into it. These campaigns do end. There are, in many instances, a limited number of packages, because obviously usually one runs a number of packages, running anywhere from $1 to many thousands of dollars, and the more you spend, the more you get. And very often in those higher end packages, they are limited. Let's say it's a house concert. You obviously can't sell 2,000 house concerts. It'd be impossible for somebody to pull it off. So the sheer fact that this platform has some time sensitivity and usually scarcity built into it, I think is, again, a part of why it works. And it's just another sales platform, but it allows you to sort of go out to your base and, again, test the market and find out if there really is then for what you're ultimately offering. And that's a much much better way to go than spending, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 on an album and all this manufacturing, only to find out that no one other than your mom and you know, a couple of close friends are actually going to go out and buy the album. But enough about Kickstarter. I think this is probably a good time to jump into this interview we did. Again, this interview, what you're going to be hearing, it's an excerpt from a Insider Circle coaching call. The Insider Circle is a mastermind community that I run, musicians who are dedicated to learning the art of direct fan marketing. And each month I release new training modules, and we have a forum where we chat on a pretty much daily basis. And there are somewhat monthly, you know, sometimes there are we don't run one every single month, but for the most part, monthly coaching calls in which users call in and we chat. And one of those people who called in was Ace Connell. Ace is someone who, again, I had said earlier, he sent me an email. He had been using, he had bought my course, Music Marketing Manifesto, and became a member of the Insider Circle and was started implementing this stuff. And I was just really impressed because he took very swift action and very effective action. He didn't get bogged down by what I see so many artists get bogged down by, you know, trying to make every last little thing perfect, stressing all the technical things. He just followed the steps, threw up his website, started driving traffic, and I think it was in 2 or 3 days he got himself 500 new subscribers and was getting, he said he was literally up all night answering emails and comments being left on Facebook, and was gearing up for a record release at the time of our conversation. And so I thought that I'd share it with you guys because, you know, this stuff is just marketing strategy. I don't have any magic spells that I can teach you how to put on your audience. Ultimately, all I can give you is sound business strategy. And let's face it, it's not going to work every single time. It's like a Wolfgang Puck could teach you how to start a pizza restaurant, and he could teach 100 people the same exact strategy 100 times over, and not every single one person would have success. And it's just the way the world sort of works. Everyone's got their different talents, different strengths. We all make different music, and we all find that we have different levels of ability when it comes to communicating with our fans. And if you can't communicate in a way that connects, or maybe you don't make music that connects, then you're going to have a harder time than someone else who does. And so it sort of breaks my heart when I occasionally hear that people are having trouble, and it does happen to be certain. But just as often, in fact, a lot more often, I get these really touching emails or calls from people who are having a lot of success with the stuff. And Ace was one of those people. And I wanted to share it with you folks because it was great to hear, and it shows you kind of what's possible. And he talks a lot about the, you know, just the way it felt to go through that experience. And I remember when I first started having success with this stuff and the way it felt to go from a career that had, for all intents and purposes, been bogged down in the mud to suddenly seeing my inbox light up again and see my fan base start to grow. So I'm going to hit the play button here and let you in on this conversation already in progress, and then I'll join you on the other end. So here goes. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about yourself and your music and, you know, how they can check out your website and everything before we get started?
Well, basically, I'm a guitar player, and the last few years I've been not in and out of bands, but I've been in bands for long periods of time, and been the bands have been good. I got fed up relying on people, because obviously people let you down, and I just wanted to take my career to basically since being 14 I've wanted to create an instrumental rock record. So I thought that it was I'm on an ultimatum with my partner, which is this is the last chance I'm allowed to sort of try with the whole my music kind of thing. So I basically have just gone and I've started making that album, and I thought I'm really gonna like hone in on the marketing just because, well, like I say, it's my last chance or I get my hand slapped. And then so I found Music Marketing Manifesto, and I've just taken it from there.
Great. And just so folks can check it out, we're talking, what's your current website or one that you'd like to share?
My name is ace.com.
My name is ace.com. Great. So let's see. You sent me an email the other day. I thought it was great because I love hearing just specific numbers, like, hey, I'm doing this, I'm getting 10%, or hey, I'm doing this and I'm seeing this specific result. And I love how quickly you were taking action. You'd be shocked how many people buy info products and all this stuff and never take action, let alone even finish the course. So it was awesome to see. And you wrote me an email. You were asking some advice on the squeeze page, and if I remember right, I was a little hesitant. I kind of wasn't so sure how well it would do, based on the headline. I thought it looked really good and everything, and I thought the headline was fine. I just thought maybe it was, needed a little more of the experience added into it. But then you wrote back saying that it actually was doing really well, which was awesome, and you were seeing your list grow rapidly, which I loved hearing. And so why don't you just kind of tell folks what happened, where you started, and what's been going on?
Well, basically, I paid for the course last Friday. I've not even had it a week yet, and I did the manifesto course in 2 days. I think it took me to do. And as I was going along, I was just doing pages and pages of notes. And after that, after I finished that, I went through the insider circle and was just picking bits and bobs, and I just thought, I'm just going to try the Facebook ads. I mean, I've not got like a lot of money or anything like that, but I just thought it just seemed the quickest way to build a list, because I have one person on my mail list, and that was me. So I just wanted to build as quick as possible. And basically, at the moment, I've got one song recorded, so I've just about finished writing the album now. I'm going to the studio next month to do it. But yeah, I just had one song, so I was like worried about no product to sell and just having one song and people wanting more. So I took a Facebook ad up, and I didn't go well. I kind of blended the two approaches, the one in the music marketing manifesto and the insider circle, and with the comparing to an artist, but I linked straight to my squeeze page. I didn't go for the quiz trivia thing. I went like super bold, and I was like fearful of the results of it, just because my genre is instrumental rock. Probably the biggest guy in there is Steve Vai, and I basically my title of my ad is the next Steve Vai question mark, and I knew that that was sort of risky because like the world in such high regard. And then the actual ad was, if you're a fan of Steve Vai, then you need to hear the new melodic virtuoso and then a dash free track. And my click through it has consistently been not between 0.2 and 0.3 on the Facebook ads, and the sort of reach circles getting like bigger. And within 3.5 days, I've just hit 513 mailing list subscribers.
That's so great.
So I've gone from nothing. I've only got 1,513.
Oh, sorry, I think I
You
did.
there?
Yeah, I think I lost you there for a second. My apologies. But yeah, so in
Okay.
you said 3 days, you've gone from one subscriber, which is yourself, to over 500 subscribers, and which is awesome. It's got to feel great. I mean, suddenly you've got this community of people that want your music and have connected with you in some way, and you literally have the beginnings of your tribe. And I don't know about you, I don't know about everyone listening, but that is the for me to keep going as a musician. I realized that, like, I didn't even really care. I'm going back a few years now before I even started all this internet marketing stuff, but I didn't really care if I made a $1 million or, was famous or whatever. I just needed the pipeline. I needed some people there holding their hands up saying, hey, I want your music. You know, some people paying attention when I put out albums to keep going. And before I learned all this stuff, everything was quite static. You know, I had no mailing list to speak of. Nothing was growing. The fan mail had stopped, you know. And the nice thing about the strategy is you can scale it up to whatever level you want. And I do think that literally international stardom is possible using this strategy. Once you start scaling up to a certain degree, you're talking about money, and it's a slightly different picture. You're going to have a team and all kinds of things. But regardless, and I'm talking if you're going for international stardom there, but regardless of what happens and regardless if you scale this up to 200,000 subscribers or 2,000 subscribers, you have this pipeline people that like your music, that are waiting for your music, they're communicating with you about it. And that, I don't know again how everyone feels, but that to me, that's what it's all about. And that's the sort of minimum of what is required for me to want to continue being an artist. And this strategy kind of guarantees success. You know, again, it doesn't guarantee the scale, but it guarantees you really can't fail with this in terms of if your goal is to build that pipeline and build that audience and see it grow on a regular basis and get that interaction and ultimately sales. Now, I mean, does that make sense? Is that fair to say? Is that sort of how it's feeling for you as you start to build this list?
Definitely. It's a bit surreal, to be honest, but I was sort of not skeptical, but I was, well, right, I wasn't skeptical, because when I sort of saw what you was talking about with the different techniques, it's basically this whole scarcity and social proof and everything like that has basically been why women have been attracted to men for the last however million years. So I didn't think that there would be a problem with getting mailing list signups, but the thing I was like really shocked about is that I've had to, like, just. I've been up till fucking morning every night since I started, just replying to people on email, on Facebook, on Twitter, and the call to action that I had in my initial email was to come post a comment on Facebook and see if you're I said I don't care what you say, just come post a comment or something along them lines, and I thought I'd maybe get a couple, but seriously, I've just constantly been, just all throughout the day, I'm constantly getting notifications that I've got new stuff on Facebook, I've got new emails, I've got everything like that. And that's just, well, it's sort of validating to me that I'm doing the sort of right thing. But at the same time, it's sort of, it's just nice to see that people are sort of connecting and actually building a tribe rather than just being a statistic on a mailing list. And it sort of makes the call to action seem a bit more, well, I didn't think as many people would take them.
Right.
But I've been really, really surprised. And then I have a blog post similar to the one that you mentioned about, you know, the Cheeseburgers in Paradise one. Yeah. I've got a similar one to that, but it's basically just about why I play guitar. Basically, well, why I do what I do, why I'm still doing it. And to cut a very long story very short, I stopped going to school when I was about 14, and I used to go to school, but there was an abandoned music room, and there was a classical guitar in there, and I just used to play it all day for like 9 hours at school and then go home and play guitar. And I didn't actually get any qualifications from school, but I was a pretty good guitar player by the end of it. So I sort of went into that, and then again at the end sort of connected them in, saying that it's all about them, the reason why I'm doing it and everything like that. And it's just that phenomenal feedback. I'm just completely blown away by it. And obviously I just want to thank you for that.
Awesome. That's so awesome to hear. And it, you know, sincerely makes it all sort of worthwhile. And you know, to be blunt, I've heard it before, like this stuff really does work when people take action like you're taking, and the nice thing looking at your page, like you get it, you put together a clear offer. There's nothing distracting there. You've got your big headline. Anyone can check it out again. What was it? Is it on, is it my name is ace.net or my name is ace.com?
The content-rich site is com and the squeeze page is .net.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I'm looking at .net right now. But it's clear, it's clean, it does the job, it speaks to people who are interested in guitar music and gets them on the list. And you, what are you paying per click right now?
11 cents, but it was down at 9 this morning.
Right, that's phenomenal. And so, but overall, since you started the campaign 3 days ago, it's the average is 11 cents.
Yeah, well, it started at around, I think the recommended was somewhere between 65 and 65 cents and $1.30, I think. But for after a few hours of it being on, it came straight. It was hovering at 15 for about 6 hours, and then it sort of hovered around the 10 cents mark.
Right. That's what one thing people really need to realize when they set these up is Facebook's going to give you this recommended bid range, and you do want to start in that range so that you can, you know, their algorithm will pick you up and start sending you some traffic. But if you get a good click-through rate, like I generally say, you want to keep it up above 1.1, which isn't always easy. But you know, Ace has got it at 0.2, 0.3. He's got such a solid click-through rate that the price has dropped, as he's described, and you will see that. I mean, you'll always see that. I've never seen anything different. Even when you don't get such a fantastic click-through rate, it still drops below what you're bidding in almost every instance. But it will start to climb if you don't maintain that click-through rate. So that's where you need to refresh your ad and try. You know, when you see it start to drop, you need to add new images and change up the headlines, things like that, to keep it refreshed. Because remember, you're advertising to the same pool of people. But that's very, very common, and that is fantastically cheap. And what are you converting at right now? What's your squeeze page converting at? You had mentioned it the other day as being pretty outstanding.
Right now it sits at 9.4.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And your AWeber's web form conversion stats?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's so fantastic. That is so you're paying roughly 25 cents a subscriber?
Yeah, it's around that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'm trying to do the math there. So, what is 0.25 times 100? Just want to make sure I'm not crazy. Yeah, so you'd be paying $25 to get 100 people on your list, and if you only convert at 2%, and you're selling, you know, a $15 album, you've gone and made a little bit of profit, and that's before. And 2% is, well, it's not low. Some markets converted only 2%, but it's lower than what I'm seeing as average. I'm seeing, you know, 4, 5, 6% as being average for people who sort of get this stuff. And so, if let's say you convert at 4%, and you're selling a $15 CD, you know, you're suddenly bringing in $60 on 25 in advertising, and you've done no house concerts, you've done no upsells, you've done no, you know, nothing. And so that may or may not bear out, but that's you can see the potential, and it's really exciting. And I'm really stoked and proud of you for doing as well as you are so quickly. And I can tell you, having dealt with now thousands of people who've bought my stuff, I do see it certainly, but it's rare that people take such quick action. And to see you in just a few days go from literally buying the course to having 500 people on your mailing list is really awesome. So well done. You're not selling anything yet, though, which is interesting. So you're booked to finish the album, but you're building your list, and you won't be. When do you reckon the soonest you'll be actually selling your album is?
Well, basically, I was setting up today a membership site, which actually Wishlist members got hacked this week. So the servers are all over the place, and like they're getting like 404 errors here and there and everything. But I had the intention of building a membership site today, but I bought Wishlist member this morning and didn't actually get it till this afternoon just because of the being hacked. So basically, I'm going to have this membership site where it's got stuff from the studio, like videos, everything like that. I'm going to offer, because it's such an early bird thing, I'm going to offer my album a week early, but for free to all the subscribers of that. just because they're actually going in before there is a product available, and it feels better on my conscience, I think, if they get this album as part of the deal, and so that they'll be able to get that a week before it's actually released. So that's where I'm at the moment. I'm just like, there's been so much stuff that I've had to do in this week, and I work a 40-hour job as well. So it's like, it's been a bit crazy, and sleep's been, well, I've got an 18-month-old daughter as well, so she wakes me up at 5:30 in the morning. So I've been surviving on 2 hours sleep, but the stuff is really starting to definitely connect with people, and it's just monetizing that now. And I feel like at the moment, a membership site is going to be the best approach for that. I can get I would talk guitar for years, and in different sort of I've taught privately, I've taught in schools, and I've owned my own music school at one point. But I'm sticking guitar lessons up there, so there's content for them. I'll be doing 2 a week, so they will have stuff now to be a part of that membership site. They'll be getting constant lessons, and when I'm in the studio, I'll be obviously recording things for them. So yeah, that's just the approach I'm going with monetizing it at the moment.
I'm sorry, I wanted to make sure I understood. So you're creating the membership site. Are you charging for the membership site?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
Gotcha. And what do you plan to charge?
Well, I was thinking of, the crazy offer thing on one of the phone calls. It might have even been the wishlist member one, where they said it's like whatever a month or whatever for the year. I want to charge for the year just so I tie people in for the year, and just an introductory offer. I'm maybe charging 30 for the year, but I'm going to say that and actually obviously go on this with my. The future is put up to, it's either $20 a month or 30 a year.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great way to go. I've had a lot of people, and that's a smart price option there. That's really brilliant. I think that I don't know about you, but when I get hit, even if it's $4 a month, seeing that monthly bill come in, it just nags at me, and I feel compelled to cancel, particularly if I don't log in and check something out over the course of a month. And so, but getting me to part with $30 over the year, that's the price resistance is the same. I'm going to object to $30 to the same degree that I'm going to object to $4. They're not going to affect me either way. I'm not going to be like $4, okay, but $30, whoa, that's not going to scare me. So there's no additional resistance for most people. There might be for a few, but that monthly nag that says, man, you're paying for this thing and you're not using it. And the reality is most people won't, most people will forget to log in and forget to engage. But at some point during the year, if they just log in and download some music even once or twice, then when that next bill comes around, they'll feel like they're getting their money's worth. And there's nothing better than imagine having 1,000 people on that, paying you $30 a year. You would theoretically, obviously some will drop off, but you theoretically have $30,000 guaranteed each year, and that will be that is a phenomenal place to be in for an independent artist. And we're just getting started. There's additional ways to monetize your career. So and obviously you can raise that up from 1,000 quite easily. So that's really smart, and that's been a debate in the past, is should I go monthly or these micro payments, or should I go annual? And I personally like the annual, so I think you're really on the right track. That's really great. When do you plan on launching the membership site?
Well, basically, that is going to be my first call to action email. So it's going to be 7 days after the subscribe. So this weekend, I'm going to be putting it all together and recording the first set of lessons. So Monday or Tuesday at the latest is when the first set of emails with the 72-hour call to action is going out.
Okay, great. Well, just keep doing what you're doing, or what it sounds like you're doing in terms of communicating with folks. That's really key here. We focus on the marketing, and if we're being honest, marketing is in effect manipulation. What you want them to do. Now, just about everything is manipulation out there in the world, if we're being honest. But at the end of the day,
the goal is to feel good about it, because what we're manipulating people to do is to engage with a product that we really, really care about and that we think will enhance their lives and their musical experience in some way. So I think that where it all really feels great and good, and where you're making, I don't know, your little corner of the world a better place, is by carving out authentic relationships. And it's cool to hear that you are spending so much time communicating with people, because a lot of people don't want to do that. They flake, they don't respond to emails. I really try to pride myself on responding to everything and doing so quickly. And I think it makes a big difference when people realize that you're a real person who really gives a crap about their product, obviously in this case your music. And so keep doing that and keep people engaged, and really, you know, you touched on it when you said that the principles are kind of similar to the principles of male-female interactions and human relationships, and they absolutely are. And it's the same basic process. You are building relationships, and if you treat people well and you authentically bond with people in your follow-up communication, then they're going to be much more predisposed to buy from you. So keep doing that as you prepare for your release, and you know, fingers crossed, I think you should do really well. I definitely want you to follow up and, you know, let us know how you sell from this list. And given that you're at 503 days, what did you say? When did you say you were going to launch? This weekend, or did you say in 7 days? I'm forgetting.
Monday. It'll be Monday.
Okay, so just a few more days, but you may be able to double your list in that time. So, you know, you might be looking at a nice start to hopefully a financially secure career. So very encouraging to see. If you want to check out Ace's stuff, his name again is Ace Connell, and you can download one of his songs for free and check out what he's doing at mynameisace.net. So anything else you want to say before we move on to the remaining questions?
One last thing that I did do that I was meaning to bring up was, before I actually started this course was when I recorded the track. And obviously I've had a little bit of marketing experience in the past with music, somewhat, not to this degree, just by being in bands and just seeing what works. I've never had a formula put to it, but I consciously made the first recording in a similar sort of pastiche, I suppose, of the two biggest players out there, Joe Satriani and Steve Vai. It's not in any way like any of their songs. It's just got that vibe of a sort of blend between them two, because I thought, like, when people are first hearing me, it's important to have something like a reference point. And that's why with my Facebook ad, I said, the next Steve Vai or whatever, because it would tap into just what they already love with Steve Vai. And then obviously my music is going to be similar to that, but it's not going to be as similar. And I was risky that people would just say, oh, you're just copying, even though it's different, like. But I've probably had maybe 150, 160 comments and feedback and emails and Facebook messages and posts off different people. And I think one or maybe two have said, yeah, you need to find your own voice. It's a very small percentage of people. So I think that maybe it obviously depends on your genre, but it may be every single that people are giving away is to make it more similar to sort of a bridge between yourself and the artist, and sort of add in for the audience, possibly. And that's just something to myself sort of thing, but it certainly helped for me. So that a lot of people comment on that in a positive way. So it might be something that better different genres.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense to really think about what that offer is and to make sure that you are, I don't know, offering something that really is going to set these prospects up to, one, deliver exactly what it is that they are currently interested in. You know, you're not needing to reinvent the wheel in terms of educating them to some musical taste that they didn't even know they had. But also, I think the more you can distill or niche out your marketing and the message in your emails and in your blog posts, and the better you're going to do, because you're walking people down one track. And people, especially artists, do have a tendency to become a bit schizophrenic with this stuff, and really kind of not match the message to the market. And it sounds like that's what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been like that in previous bands, where you just have a fear of people saying, "Oh, you're not original. You're not this. You're not that." And it's like, nothing's original, really, like, in this day and age. So it's, but I'm not saying just completely rip it off in the slightest, but just sort of just have hints towards the people that people are already fans of. And I mean, my Facebook targeting at the moment is just going towards people who are fans of Steve Vai.
Right.
So it's really just tapping into that sort of that love that they already have, and just bringing my own spin on it.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm looking at your Facebook page as you're talking, and you know, it's just full of comments. Got your free MP3, excellent track. Cannot wait for the album. Just got your track Beyond, very nice. Dude, reminds me more of Tony. I don't actually know how to say his last name, but McAlpine. Sweet, better. Thanks for the free song. Love it. Thank you for the free song. I love it, bro. Can't wait for the album, you know, and the list goes on. So really, really cool. Great to see. And again, you know, well done. So we'll have you back when you have actually launched your membership site. And it's going to be cool to see, because this comes up a lot, and artists are unsure, could they start making money right away? And here's a great approach to doing that, as opposed to waiting until the album's done. And I think this is a great approach to do it. And it sounds like you really have your head screwed on tight, and you've got a good feel for this stuff. So well done, and thanks for joining us on the call and sharing your story.
It's been my pleasure, John. I'll speak to you soon.
Sounds good. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
All right. So again, that was Ace Connell, and you can check out his music at mynameisace.com. Now, I don't want to get too much into Ace's personal life and reveal too many of the details, but I do know that Ace suffered a personal loss in his life shortly after this call. And so I think things have been in a bit of a holding pattern for Ace over the last month or two. So my sincere prayers and thoughts and sincere condolences go out to Ace if you do get a chance to listen to this. So hang in there, and we'll see you again hopefully soon in the Insider Circle. I'm expecting some big things for your album launch when you finally do get that album out on the market. So once again, thanks, Ace, for taking the time to join us on that call and letting us share it with the broader Music Marketing Manifesto listening base. Steve, what were your impressions listening to that call and everything that Ace had to say?
It's a really great story. I really understand how he feels. You know, you're getting to a certain point in your life. You know, you and I are both in our 30s, where you kind of feel like, you know, you're going to have to do something soon if you're going to do it. And he took a chance, and he went out and he found your material and he put it to work. And I kind of got a bit of a chill just listening to the way that he explained the feeling of just, you know, having that interaction with the fan base again, you know, having people actually talk about your stuff like it's relevant, and instead of something that was in the past, or, you know, something that you used to do, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I think that's really great. You know, I was stunned to hear his conversion rate on his squeeze page there. What did he say, 89%? Is that what he said? 82, something like that?
I didn't think it was actually that high. I thought it was about 35%, if memory serves.
Yeah. You know, I must have heard it wrong when I heard that. But he's got an extraordinarily high conversion rate, and it's just awesome to hear that practically overnight like that. He picks up a course, puts everything into action the way that he should, and he's got 500 subscribers right off the bat. That's awesome.
Sure. And you know, we do receive a lot of emails and various testimonials that come in. And if you're ever curious about this stuff and what kind of experience real artists are having with all this stuff, you can go to musicmarketingmanifesto.com and click on the testimonials tab. That's just actually a small sampling of the stuff that comes in when Steve or I can remember to ask folks to let us publish it. But it is, again, it really is touching. I know Music Marketing Manifesto has really become a business for me, and it's a focus point of my life, but I don't do it just for the money. I run several online businesses, and Music Marketing Manifesto isn't the most profitable of them, and it takes about 1,000% more time from my day than anything else that I do, but I do it because I really dig it. And anyone who's ever sent in an email has probably talked to Steve as well. Steve's a big part of that business, and you know, we really do our best to take care of folks and really do give a crap. And so it means a lot to get these testimonials and hear from folks that are seeing results. That was, these principles, you know, really did sort of change my life and my career. And I know Steve, that's how Steve and I met. This was all stuff that Steve was doing, and we really connected on that front before he began sort of working with me here at Music Marketing Manifesto. But it's awesome to hear. You guys can check that out. And I just really can't vouch for these strategies enough. You know, I'm not some guy who invented all this stuff. The basic principles here have been around for well over 100 years. We're just sort of co-opting these strategies and refining them so that musicians can use them and benefit from them. And that's, again, time and time again, we're seeing. So once again, thanks, Ace, for sharing that information with us. I really loved hearing your story. And again, I'm really excited to see what ultimately happens when your record comes out. I think we're pretty close to being ready to wrap up there, Steve. One of the things that we like to do is kind of end off with sort of a pick of the week, just anything that we've come across that's on our mind that we think is worth sort of sharing. I said pick of the week, but we don't even do these podcasts every week. We seem to do them about once a month on average, but we'll call them pick of the month then. But I know that there was something that you were telling me about, an article that you had come across. What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is an article on Hypebot.com, and it was written by a gentleman named Nick Robertson, titled 20 Tips for a Kick-Ass Musician's Facebook Page. I thought it was really good. I mean, he's got, you know, a long list here. He's got about 20 different things that you can do. Some of it's very straightforward. Some of it's very obvious stuff. There were a couple in here, and just to give you an example, number 10 on his list was he listed quotes and pictures make a great team. You know, you post up your favorite lyrics along with a relevant picture to tell your fans a powerful story and bring them deeper into your world. And, you know, this is something I really struggle with social media. I have a hard time caring, to be honest. So when it comes to coming up with ideas, you know, another thing he lists on here is you want to make sure you post every day. And for me, it's tough to come up with things to post about. And I never even thought about the angle of, you know, coming up with some of your own song lyrics, throwing them up there, and then posting a picture that kind of tells that story as well. And I think that would really encourage a lot of interaction with people, especially if you got fans that dig a certain tune and they know it by heart and they know exactly which lyric you posted up there and they appreciate the picture. It might start some conversation and even get you some new attention, some new eyeballs. But yeah, thing to do here, number one that he's listed on his list, which I think is really, really important for your Facebook page, is to customize it with a custom URL, something short and concise and memorable so that people can easily find you on Facebook. And that's my pick of the week. That was the article on Hypebot by Nick Robertson. That's Tips for Kick-Ass Musician's Facebook Page. John, what did you come up with your pick for the week?
Well, you know, I suppose what's on my mind is something that it's the subject matter for a blog post I'm actually currently working on, and it may very well be the case that I publish that blog post before this podcast episode goes out. But it's Facebook lookalike audiences, something I've been playing with. Basically, if you haven't already discovered it, Facebook rolled out something called the Power Editor a few months ago. And it's something that if you've only played around with Facebook or you don't do a lot of advertising, you probably haven't come across. But it's basically an advanced ad editor that can only be used with a Chrome browser. Why they've done it that way, I have no idea. It seems quite odd to me. But you have to install Chrome in order to use it. Very easy to install once you've got a Power Editor up and running. You can do a lot with what are called custom audiences. And so you can go and you can download your customer list. Let's say people have bought your album, and hopefully you are segmenting your list so you've got a customer list as well as just a general fan list. You take that customer list, upload it into Facebook's Power Editor and create a custom audience, and then click a little button and create a lookalike audience. And what Facebook does is they sort of look for commonalities within the profiles of those people that you've uploaded. You know, they go and find corresponding accounts to each one of those email addresses, and then they look for commonalities and determine sort of a demographic profile for your average user, and then they go and scan their billion plus users for people who match the same demographic profiles, and you can then increase your reach and create essentially a clone audience and advertise just to those people. So it offers a lot of really precise targeting. And I know I see this a lot with musicians when we get into targeting. They're like, well, I don't really even know what kind of music I make. I don't know who's going to like it. I don't know what, you know, demographic information defines my particular or my potential fans. And so this is a great way for people who don't really know that information to click a few buttons and then create a clone audience and expand their reach as a result. And I really like that. That's Facebook lookalike audiences. And again, most likely by the time you're listening to this, that will be up on the site as a fairly recent blog post at musicmarketingmanifesto.com. So that's kind of my pick of the week. Before we do sign off, I think you dropped out a little bit there where you were giving credit to the author and letting people know where they could find that article you were talking about. You want to run that by for the folks one more time?
Absolutely. That was an article on hypebot.com. That's HYPEBOT.com. And the article, again, was called 20 Tips for a Kick-Ass Musician's Facebook Page by Nick Robertson. Pretty good stuff in there. Very useful information. I would definitely check it out.
Great. Well, again, thanks everyone for listening. This is John Ojaka and Steve Rogers. He works with me at musicmarketingmanifesto.com. He has joined us on the call, and I really appreciate you taking the time, Steve. And if you ever have sent in an email, then there's a good chance that you've already spoken with Steve. We really do appreciate you guys. If you ever have any questions or need any help, you can always reach one of us at support@musicmarketingmanifesto.com. And as we said at the beginning of this call, if you like the information that you're hearing during this podcast and would like to get more info like it, you can go to musicmarketingmanifesto.com and sign up for your free copy of the Music Marketing Blueprint. Any final words, Steve, before we sign off?
No. I'm definitely going to check out your pick of the week. It would give me a good excuse to start using Google Chrome. It sounds really cool. Definitely awesome to be back on the line with you, man. It's been a while since we spoke.
Yeah, we got to kick these things off. And speaking of kicking it off, we got to get a Music Marketing Manifesto theme song going. One of these days, I'm going to hold a little concert. So if anybody's got a little jingle for us, by all means, send it in to support@musicmarketingmanifesto.com. We need an opening theme song and a closing theme song. So, you know, we can sound very slick and pro. I think that would be nice.
Yeah, sounds good. Been with to have a jingle contest.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Again, this is John Ojaka.
And this is Steve Rogers.
And you're listening to the Music Marketing Manifesto podcast. Thanks and take care.